8:15, having arrived on a snowy morning, we're going to call the Education Finance meeting to order. And I've got to commend all these members here, who have trudged through the storm. And
hey, the Republicans are here.
Okay. Represent Grunhagen. And we will not be taking any roll call votes today.
Hey, we could win.
We didn't even have a
quorum. Yeah, that's right. Members, before we go any further, there is some information that had been talked about as far as regarding using price indexes. So just for your information, this came from last meeting when we had the Radinovich bill that raised the aid based upon, that was the implicit price deflator, but we also have some information on the CPI also. Otherwise, we have, I think, four bills on the agenda today, four or five bills. And first up is no stranger to any of us. I think we saw him a little bit the last night, Representative Atkins. And we don't have a quorum, so we're not going to move your bill right now. But, I think before we get in here, a couple bills that are coming up today deal with alternative facilities revenue, and you have a handout here on what schools have that. I don't know, Mr. Strom, if you wanted to just review that real quick as folks come up to the table. Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. There's a printout in your packet labeled Estimated Alternative Facilities Revenue Fiscal Year 14. Let me spend just a moment talking about the Alternative Facilities Program and then explain the printout for you. In the late 80s, the legislature created the Health and Safety Revenue Program, and that program allowed school districts on a project-by-project basis to levy for the costs associated with fixing health and safety problems in their facilities. One thing that the Department of Education observed is that amount jumped around a lot from year to year in the first few years. And because we actually had some statutory caps on how much health and safety revenue could exist, smaller districts were finding that they were squeezed by changes in the big districts on health and safety estimates. So the Department of Education proposed in the early 90s a second program called the Alternative Facilities Program to pull the large districts out of the health and safety program. But as that provision was introduced and worked through the process, it did one other thing as well, and that is it allowed those school districts in the Alternative Facilities Program to not only do health and safety, but also to do deferred maintenance. So the big change was that those districts could do deferred maintenance. And essentially when it was created, there were two criteria. There was a square footage requirement of 1.85 million square feet of building space and an average age index for the buildings. Since that time, the Alternative Facilities Program has added a second level of qualification for those with quite old buildings and 1.5 million square feet or more of space. And additionally, the legislature has four times, essentially by special legislation, authorized districts to participate in the program. So what you have in front of you is a printout that shows at the top of the printout in bold those districts that currently qualify for the alternative facilities revenue, and then following on the next several pages, starting halfway down that page and on the next several pages, each other school district sorted from greatest to smallest amount of square footage in that school district. As you read across the printout, you'll see that there's two categories, alternative facilities that's bonded. Many school districts, when they do their alternative facilities, they'll sell bonds, and then essentially it'll be a debt service item. Others will do something called pay-as-you-go alternative facilities, and they'll have an annual levy for that as well. And you can see there's both an aid and a levy for the program. The aid is an artifact of something the tax committee did in the mid-90s when the tax committee, to late 90s, the tax committee was interested in compressing tax rates and they needed a lever to keep taxes from shifting as much as they otherwise would. So they created something called Alternative Facilities Aid. And just a select number of districts get those, and that was primarily a tool the tax committee used so that they could otherwise compress the class rate, particularly the commercial industrial class rate, to lower it at that time without having the shifts in taxes as large as they would otherwise be. So if you read across the printout there in the very right-hand column, you'll see the alternative facilities revenue per pupil that those districts get. Second to last column is that revenue in total, and you can see the aid and levy share as well. So, Mr. Chair, that's a brief description of the printout in front of members and the alternative facilities program.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Straub. Representative Akins, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hopefully yourself and other members of the committee are not so tired of me from last night that you'll... I've learned, Mr. Chairman, that when you have good testifiers, you mostly keep your mouth shut, and I got really good testifiers. My one comment would be that this is a huge deal for small and modest-sized school districts. We're surrounded by a bunch of districts that get this. Apple Valley, Eagan, Rosemont, Lakeville, South Washington County, literally almost wrapping all the way around us. Our districts, and when you're trying to compete with those terrific school districts for students and you have your one arm tied behind your back, it makes it a real challenge. And so we're just asking for a level playing field. And with that, I will turn it over to our business manager, and we've got a school board member also. Mr. Mandel serves on our school board, but he's also, you probably see him at, he's part of the Capital Area Investment, or Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, if I got that correct. I'll turn it over to Mr. Mandel.
Representative Atkins, thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Mandel. I'm here as a school board member, 9 years at Invergrove Heights School District 199.
And I am Jason Motzenberger, Director of Business Services for Invergrove Heights School District.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm just here today as a school board member, not on behalf of the Capitol or anything else here at the state. Where I've been here for 25 years, so a lot of you might recognize me. The newer ones won't. I've been here for 9 years. The first thing I did when I became a school board member, I filled a vacant seat, was we passed a $33 million bond levy. That was the last bond levy we passed. That was back in 2001. And the only reason we passed it took two tries. Invergrove is... it's a small, blue-collar, working-class community. It usually takes us two tries to get anything passed in the community. And the only reason that passed in the final was because we did some good video presentations and some good public presentations, and we had more water in our boiler rooms than we had in our pool. That's how old it was. Our buildings were very, very old. We had a California-designed middle school that had skylights and, believe it or not, open hallways that had since been filled in with glass and walls. The skylights had failed and everything else had failed, so we were basically having to rebuild our middle school. When we go out for levy renewals, it usually takes two or three tries. The last one we passed was for a straight renewal, no inflation, no nothing. So we are operating, needless to say, at a net deficit. In my 9 years, we've cut over $6 million from a $39 million budget. And as Representative Atkins said, we're surrounded by bigger districts. You just look at your chart, and you can see how big Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan District is. Their buildings are newer than ours. Our buildings are older. We were formed out of, we came out of South St. Paul School District. But I cannot tell you what a disadvantage it is. I mentioned the bond referendum that we had when we built a new middle school, and we rehabbed some of our existing elementary schools. In those 9 years, we've closed two elementary schools. But we have a five-year maintenance plan that we cannot even implement because we do not have the bond monies needed to implement that maintenance plan. And you know how important maintenance is. If you don't, just stay tuned, and I'll be telling you how important it is we maintain the Capitol. And we're 100 years of maintenance deferred there. So we're talking about 30 years, 35 years for our buildings, and we are constantly playing catch-up. We know what we need to do. We just can't afford to do it. And not having this kind of money available to us would make a significant change. It would help us bring our facilities up to grade, up to snuff, and we'd be able to be more competitive with those larger school districts surrounding us.
Mr. Motzenberger.
I would also add that deferred maintenance is a major problem for all school districts. We all face challenges with maintaining our facilities. And the current law directs some of the funding to those districts surrounding us in particular that we're interested in. We would argue that...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but would you introduce yourself? I did, but I...
Certainly.
You didn't, so for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Jason Motzenberger, Director of Business Services for Invergrove Heights.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
We would argue that the current law says that the districts that get it, one of the criteria is based on square footage and age of buildings. At 1.85 million square feet, averaging 15 years of age, or 1.5 million square feet averaging 35 years. We would say that it's much less about the number of buildings in our district and much more about the aging condition of them. And so districts around us like Rosemount that have much greater square footage than we do, we don't believe that that is equitable. We would also say that free and reduced and low minority districts tend to not receive some of this funding. It appears that districts like Lakeville, South Washington County, Wayzata, Edina, districts that have lower free and reduced rates and also low minority are the districts that are receiving it, where districts like us that are seeing increasing minority, increasing free and reduced, districts like Richfield, Columbia Heights that have high percentage in those areas as well, do not receive this money, do not have access to it. We would say that diverts the money away from the districts that most need the money, those disadvantaged children. We would say that the taxpayer dollars, we could avoid paying some interest on long-term debt. We could save the taxpayers some money. Because we have to go out and bond for this, we're paying interest on those bonds. We could save the taxpayers some funds there. We would be able to enhance local control if we had access to these funds, and we would give school boards the ability to properly maintain safe school facilities for our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a couple questions. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Listening to the presentation, I'm a little bit confused. I noticed that Invergrove Heights is the 43rd below in the group that is not receiving, and they're concerned about losing students to districts that do have that. My experience, since most of the districts in my district touch a school that's on the list, a school that has many of these advantages, however, that district is losing over 1,000 students to these disadvantaged school districts who get less funding but are innovative and creative, and they do well. So I have some, I guess, reluctance to think that that should be biasing towards supporting this. The other is when you're mentioning 30 to 35 years of deferred maintenance and your average age is less than 35 years, that would lead me to believe that you haven't done any maintenance on anything if you have three or more decades of deferred, so I guess I don't see anything in the testimony to push singling out one district. And frankly, if there was a thought that this should be adjusted, for age, because you're still in that, 1.8 million, you're not up to the 35 years yet. Maybe look at adjusting, some criteria. However, singling out districts to be able to go, and I assume the main point is do it without voter approval. Frankly, the community, that if you don't have buy-in, participation, and, actively have the community with the school district, you lose one of the big things that is successful in many of the districts that don't have the funding, is that they've got the community engaged, the parents, the neighborhoods, so that they help the students, and that's how you gain the achievement. And that's how you get districts that don't have all this other funding or options doing very well and having people move their children to those districts. So I guess I'm a little skeptical on the intent of this bill.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments are a comment more than a question, and as we've listened to so much testimony since we've been called to session, it's pretty clear that we've gone through a period of probably 20 years of a disparity of equity and funding between some of the different school districts, and particularly the rural or greater Minnesota school districts and the smaller ones. And in relating to some of our school districts in the Senate district that I represent, it's very clear we have both AMSD schools and C schools in our district, and it's very clear that through this disparity of equity funding, that the maintenance aspects of what should be general fund provisions kind of get raided to make ends meet. And unfortunately, that has created an untenable situation where infrastructure and buildings tend to fall into disrepair. And recently, our Rockford School District found themselves in that same situation, and finally, after lots of appeal, finally just approved a $30 million referenda for capital improvements and repairs. That having been said, we need to make sure that we don't find school districts all across the state faced with having to expend huge sums of money for lack of maintenance. Right. And so I think this is going in a right direction, but I would echo what Mr. Quam says. I think we should not be singling out an individual school district, but ought to be looking at giving some tools to the schools that would ensure that all of the taxpayer dollars that are invested in our schools are maintained properly, so that we don't have these big outlays and big burdens in lump sums to the schools.
Thank you. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And don't worry, Representative Atkins, your Republican friends have your back this morning in committee, so we'll make sure we get this done. But just a quick question for the testifiers about the school shift. Were you required to borrow money as a result of the school shift?
No, we were not.
Mr. Motzenberger.
We were not required to borrow money. We made significant budget reductions to increase our fund balance so that we could cover our cash flow needs.
Okay.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that decision was made, I mean, we've heard testimony that money was pretty cheap. And so you made the decision to make the cuts instead of to borrow the money.
Right. Mr. Motzenberger.
Okay. All right, thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, just a quick question for Mr. Strom, perhaps. Do you know why we have these limits in place? I mean, is there a reason why $1.5 million was the magic number?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, the basic scheme prior to the late 1980s was that any facility need essentially should have been done through a large facility need should have been done through a bond issue, a voter-approved bond issue. And in the mid-80s, a task force began looking at school buildings and school maintenance issues, and that task force recommended the new capital formula that's now 20-some years old, that had three parts to it. It had an equipment part, a facilities part, and then this health and safeties part, but did not address the issue of alternative facilities. When the alternative facilities program was created a few years later, the 1.85 million square foot was essentially chosen, basically to get the very largest districts out of the health and safety pool. It's not clear to me that there was any basis for why that was a better number than 2 million square feet or 1 million square feet, but the idea was that was separating the large districts out so that other districts would be less affected. And then a couple of years later is when the 1.5 million square footage and the 35 years of age limit was added as well. So we initially started with only the larger square footage and the lower age, and then added the second criteria a few years later.
Yes, Mr. Mandel.
Mr. Chair, I in response to Representative Quam, if I misspoke, I want to apologize. We have not had 35 years of deferred maintenance. What I said was that we have, when we did our bond levy in 2001, we had a five-year maintenance plan. We have not been able to implement that because we have not had the monies to do so. We spent everything we had on the building. Since that time, we have continued to do maintenance on the buildings. And as far as the success of the school district, we have, for five straight years now, we have been rated in the top 100 schools in the nation by U.S. News and World Report based on our AP and the fact that our AP programs, we now have, I think, either seven or nine classes, and they reach down to all people, kids of all colors and minorities, and we have had a higher success rate. So we have gone from like in the hundreds down to the low 20s in ranking in the nation. We also have a number of innovative programs. So it's not the issue is that we have less than 17% of the population of Inver Grove Heights with school-age kids. And when you have that many, when you have that kind of a aging population, you face both, you know, when I was growing up, we had chalkboards. Now they have whiteboards and all this kind of stuff. And the fact that there's not the familiarity with the schools. For the past 3 years, we've had Technology Saturdays where the students offer an all-day seminar and workshops for the adults. So we can come in, people like myself can come in and learn how to use tablets and iPads and iPods and the latest things so that we can help the kids with this school. But by no means did I mean to infer, if that's what was taken, that there's been a disinvestment in the community.
Very good. Representative Brainerd, I see here Mankato's square foot is 1,499,605. They could build a hut the size of this room and they would now qualify. Why haven't they done that?
Well, Mr. Chair,
having said that, I think it's now under construction.
Yes, you just took my line, and that was going to be my ending. I actually had a rational argument first, and then I was going to say I'd go home to my district and recommend they build a lean-to onto the high school. But we have, and this is, none of these comments in any way disparage the issues around Inver Grove Heights' needs, but Mankato has been trying to get into this pool for a long time. As Mr. Strom knows, we have had a variety of bills over the years to extend the line, change the formula. But if you looked at this instead of just a straight number on, you know, square footage and age and some kind of a ratio, we clearly would qualify. So it's like we've been trying to get into that pool of money for a long time. So I guess my only comments are echo Representative Quam's, and that's there's maybe some need to look at the formula and quit just making exceptions. And I know whenever there's a line, somebody's below that line, but nevertheless, occasionally it's worthwhile to examine the rationale for the line.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in the meantime, I will go home and make that recommendation to my district.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I tend to agree with Representative Brainerd. I think we need to reform this. It looks to me, well, I know we made two exceptions, and that was in 99 in session law where we made the change. But as we look at those who are listed along with Mankato, we're going to be setting a precedent if this goes forth. And it probably should, but I think we're going to be joined by 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, at least 15 other school districts will immediately seek to do what Inver Grove Heights is doing today. So maybe we should actually reform this part of the funding.
Representative Erickson, and I think all the members have mentioned this, is these schools have maintenance concerns. And it shouldn't come down to whether or not you can afford them or not, because it's ultimately the public's dollars and investment. And we know if you can maintain things, it's cheaper in the long run than to ultimately fix them. So I, Representative Erickson and others who have talked, we need to look at this area. One question I have, Mr. Motzenberger, how much do you think you would spend if you were, how much maintenance would you do, how much per pupil, or what would that range be?
Mr. Mandel. I've been on the facilities committee all the 9 years, and I know we're working on quote, our wish list before we get to our priority list, before we get to our need list. And I could probably get back to you with that number. I don't have it right now in front of me, but I could get I could get that number to you.
Okay. Before we go on, I'm going to see, does anyone in the audience have anything to say for or against House File 397? Representative Atkins, any last
comments? Just a final comment, and that is I think our friends from South St. Paul have a similar bill, and I share with Representative Erickson and Representative Bryant. I think everybody has been echoing the same. One of the challenges that we have is when we're going out for operating levies with some regularity, the capital levies are put on the back burner. And as a result, you end up with this situation of more and more deferred maintenance. But you've got very, very frugal. In fact, some of you probably know Bridget Sutton. Tony's wife is on our school board. Mark Westfall, who's the chair of the CD2 for the Republican Party, is on our school board. We have a very balanced and thoughtful school board that's very prudent there in their expenditures. And it's been a real challenge just to keep up with basic maintenance needs. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we would absolutely echo the comments that have been made that it's not just Denver Grove, but many school boards are faced with this very same issue. And you've got schools that are crumbling. If we can at least get some help in that vein, it would be very helpful for a lot of school districts. Thank you very much.
Representative Atkins, thank you for bringing this issue forward. And we now have a quorum. Could someone move the bill to lay it over?
So moved.
Representative Hertaus moves to lay over House File 397 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
And we also have a quorum now for the minutes. So would anyone care to approve of the February 28th, 2013 minutes?
So moved again.
Representative Hertaus is doing extra duty today. He moves the minutes of February 28th, 2013. Any discussion? If not, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say not, nay. Motion carries. The minutes are approved. Representative Hansen, I think we'll take your bill next because it's the same category. And so if someone could move House File 64. Representative Morgan moved 64 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Ooh. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving us up. I have another bill up in another committee, so I appreciate this. Listening to the Inver Grove presentation, we're here for the same issue. And I think one of the questions that you may have, well, you may have noted that Inver Grove district came from the South St. Paul district. So the South St. Paul district is special district number 6. It's one of the oldest in the state. And I have with me Dr. Webb, who is the superintendent. I would encourage you to look at the bill summary by House Research and note that the South St. Paul district's average building age is 43 years. We have the high school, I believe, over 90 years old, and that means the boiler in the high school is over 90 years old. But our square footage is under, Representative Reinhardt, is under the magic number, and so we have aging buildings, but smaller square footage. So for that, Dr. Webb.
Good morning. I'm Dave Webb, superintendent of the South St. Paul School District. And we're going to echo some of the comments you just heard from Inver Grove as well. But Inver Grove and South St. Paul are right next to each other, but we are surrounded by every district that does participate in the alternative facilities levy. So we are coming together today to really make our request for inclusion into the alternative facilities aid category. We have, as Representative Hansen said, one of the oldest, most beautiful high schools in the state, but it's over 90 years old. Our former middle school, now one of our elementaries, was built in the early 50s, in 1951. Our only other major building it was built 20 years ago on a voter-approved bond. So those are our three, we have three primary buildings in our district. And we, frankly, can't keep up. On the back of the handout that you have, we have costed out exactly what we have projected for the next 5 years, South St. Paul spending. It's about $1 million a year. So the needs continue to back up. The pressure for South St. Paul specifically was a few years ago, as funding became tighter and tighter, we had to make sure that we got our learning levy passed, the levy to kind of move forward with a recent bond had to get in the back seat. So and the first attempt at a learning levy failed in South St. Paul, the second passed. That's the kind of pressure that that we're under, and we have 40% free and reduced poverty of the kids in South St. Paul. So it's no easy task with only 20% of families in South St. Paul sending kids to the school district to get this passed.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. Representative Baum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I notice on your handout, or the handout from the testifier, that he lists 37.2 years in the form. It's it was a 45. It's a much higher. So I'm assuming in here it's age of the average square foot. One of the two.
That's probably accurate.
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam. Yes, the department essentially weights each addition or each part of the building by the age of that part of the square footage. So it's weighted by the square footage of each age of each addition and each part of a building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate the age of the average square foot as being probably the best one. So on your sheet, you're underestimating your age, and I understand your concern with an older facility. However, sometimes those older facilities are very beautiful, and the main construction. It's just the HVAC and high tech and other stuff. So I think that if we do look at this type of adjustment, maybe instead of individual, that we take into account the amount of code difference or modifications and that type of thing, the era of some of the facilities would have maybe a rating factor, for updating or modernizing instead of just the age or the square footage, because, frankly, that's often more expensive than building.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks. It's kind of interesting information. But, the good news is on issues over 89 years old, we've had a lot of our partnership on the committee here. So if you're over 89 years old, we're both sides are open to dealing with it. But, when I was on the school board, I just remember we had older buildings also in my school district, GSL out Glencoe Silver Lake, 2859. But we could automatically, I can't remember if it was on a per pupil basis or a capped basis, but we could levy, because of the age of our buildings, mm-hmm. up to $500,000 automatically mm-hmm. without voter approval for maintenance, update, and those types of things. How does that play into this?
So
Dr. Webb.
Yeah, thank you. We currently receive a levy. It's just one-tenth of what anyone in the alternative facilities category receives. So that's the rub.
So Mr. Chair, you do get to levy, but so it's only
we have
10%.
Go through the chair, please. Representative Grunhagen, what's your question?
Mr. Chair, so you do have that levy, but it's only 10% of what this levy would be.
Dr. Webb.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And Dr. Webb, can you tell us a little bit about South St. Paul? Do you have stable enrollment? I know you have a changing enrollment, but could you comment on
Dr.
That?
Webb?
Thank you. This is my first time. So
yeah, that's fine.
So we have a wonderful school district. We have we've increased in enrollment, 100 kids mm-hmm. In the few years, each year for the 3 years that I've been there. We have we're just like in the Moundsville School District, we have partnered with Inver Hills to begin an early college program. We have 19 students that are partnering to complete their AA degree as juniors and seniors. We're the Minnesota's first K-12 IB school district, so we're drawing kids. We're also running out of space. So.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone here that in the audience that would care to testify for or against House File 64? Not Representative Hansen, any closing words?
Just thank you very much. I think with both this presentation and Inver Groves, you see that there needs to be some change to accommodate for 2013 realities with these schools. I'd happily invite the committee, if you're looking for a place to have a meeting that's close to the Capitol and in a beautiful 90-year-old building, we'd be happy to welcome you out and give you a tour. It's close, and we're proud of our district, and but we need to have some things to bring it up to the current realities that we need. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And Dr. Webb, thank you for your testimony. Thanks for being here. Dr. Webb, do you have school today, or was it canceled?
We, along with every district in Dakota County, have closed for today.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I heard, I got a phone call from Dr. Webb at 6 o'clock informing me my son would be staying home today. So.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you.
And we'll lay over House File 64 for possible inclusion. Next, we have, I don't see Representative Dill. So we will go to Representative Dorhold, House File 431. Anyone care to move House File 431? Representative Radenovich moves House File 431 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Dorhold, I think you have an author's amendment. If you folks, if you would, members, look through your packets. There is a A130131. Representative Radenovich moves the amendment. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to take the vote on the 0131 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dorhold, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair. My testifiers are not coming, as I wouldn't ask them. I wouldn't have them trench 94 all the way from St. Cloud this morning. So I'm very here on behalf of District 742 on this bill.
Very good. Please proceed.
The amendment is really what shouldn't change much, but it is the debt service fund and not the building construction fund, which they want to change the monies from. So that may be a significant change in how the bill reads. Basically, District 742, as you may be aware, we are highly burdened with a special education funding mandate. Currently, we have about a $555 per pupil levy operation going, and this allowing us to transfer these funds would get to what some of you spoke about earlier, which is some capital improvements, some much-needed equipment and grounds and maintenance, technology infrastructure, completion of some wireless systems, upgraded security camera systems, a lot of repairs to buildings. And it would also allow 742 to pay off a remodel in South Junior High a little quicker than planned. So basically, that's the intent of changing the dollars for this fund here.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is for Mr. Strom. Would you remind us of our historical record of doing this kind of transfer?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, a school district's debt fund is the one set aside for repayment of the bonds, and the legislature, the state law says that money has to remain there, as do the bond covenants, that money needs to remain there to repay those bonds. The legislature has, however, authorized a number of transfers from the debt redemption fund The House has generally looked unfavorably on these, the Senate less severely upon these. And so there have been a number. If you'll give me 3 seconds, I can look up how many debt redemption transfers there have been over the last 20 years.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
I'm also wondering, does Representative Dorholt know, with this amendment, to what extent this would affect your debt?
Representative Dorholt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, to some extent, I do know that we were just recently rated by Moody's on our debt service as AA1 and AA3, which has been pretty good. And the dollar figures I don't have for you.
I was going to ask, that's off of Representative Erickson's question, if Mr. Strom, what are the financial implications of these fund transfers? I'm, you know, looking at a fiscal note here, and it says $316,000. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, let me answer Representative Erickson's question and then yours, if you don't mind.
You bet.
Representative Erickson, since 1988, the legislature has authorized 137 fund transfers. 34 of those have been out of the debt redemption fund since over that time period. Mr. Chair, the reason why there's a fiscal note associated with moving money out of things like the debt redemption fund is that each year when a school district levies to repay its bonds, the statute says levy a little more than you need to make the repayment so that you're not caught short. So districts essentially levy 105% of what they need to repay the bonds each year. And then as an excess builds up, it's referred to as the debt service excess. As that excess builds up, there's a formula that every several years will take the excess out and reduce the levy in the following year. So essentially what happens is it's reducing the amount the taxpayers will pay in a future year for those bonds. So when the legislature authorizes a school district to transfer money from its debt redemption fund, the way the fiscal note works is that it assumes that a levy reduction in the debt fund will not happen so that the levy is higher than it will otherwise be. If the district qualifies for equalization aid, there's an aid and levy effect directly to it. Otherwise, essentially, it's a levy effect for the debt redemption fund, because the argument is even though it wouldn't have been higher, the district would have had a lower levy than it otherwise would if it takes debt excess and uses that for a different purpose. So that's why, Mr. Chair, you'll see on these bills a fiscal note that shows a levy increase when the district essentially is not making a decrease. That's the same as a levy increase for the way we're tracking that.
And on the fiscal note, Mr. Stromberg, it says $316,000. Is that less an aid then? What is that?
Mr. Chair, this fiscal note, I believe, was done presuming that the St. Cloud School District was going to transfer it from building construction.
Oh, okay.
And because the transfer from building construction would have essentially reduced a levy that is shiftable, there would have been an aid loss on that levy that's shiftable.
Right.
But the district apparently prefers to make the transfer from the debt service fund. And one last thing to add about that, the building construction fund, after the district sells bonds, they put the money in the building construction fund, and they use that money to pay the contractors. And then after a certain number of years after they finished all the work on the building, the rest, any balance in there that's not spent on the project, is supposed to go into the debt redemption fund to essentially help repay those building bonds.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at St. Cloud being on the alternative facilities revenue spreadsheet as being one, you know, they've got an older facility. I'm curious if this debt is out of the levy, you know, that was done with this. In other words, the original levy was not taken to the voters. It was done, you know, under this other statute. So therefore, the money that's in there didn't go before the voters for a vote, so that it would not be inconsistent that the levies extended because they didn't vote on it to begin with.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, if you look at the spreadsheet on the alternative facilities, you'll see that that you're correct that it is in the levy amount that they're showing in the St. Cloud School District. If you look at the debt levy there, you'll see that read across there, and I believe if I'm reading right, that's zero in the debt. So they're doing their alt facilities as a pay-as-you-go basis. So the debt excess would actually be from a bond sale that they conducted some number of years ago, and not in the alternative facility program, where it looks to be that they're doing an annual levy for the alternative facilities program.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that this actually comes from something that the voters, you know, the district went and said, this is what we're going to do, and the voters said, we trust you to, and we support what you're doing. So it's sort of a, contract, covenant, or however you want to put it with the voters, that's what the money was going to be used for. And if the district has this other capability, and then for the operating capital account, why don't they just utilize this avenue to take care of the capital investment, the maintenance and that, because it has the same effect of doing it without going to the voters, but I would see that as being a little bit more honest, because you're not changing after the fact that agreement or covenant you had between the district and the voters, and it might make it easier for the voters to, if they came in the future for a bond, to say, we'll go, as opposed to, negatively impacting that relationship, so that they don't know if what they're voting on is going to be changed afterwards. So if they have the option to do it here, I think it's more clean, more, upfront than an after-the-fact change. I'm just curious if they could do that in place of this.
Mr. Chair, Strong. Representative Quam, the situation with alternative facilities is a district can do deferred maintenance, but they can't essentially do new construction. And so there's some things that they could do with alternative facilities that they could do in their capital fund that they can't do with alternative facilities. So, for example, if they were to build a new wall to divide a classroom in two, that wouldn't count for deferred maintenance. Or if they were to essentially want to rewire a building to make it compatible with modern technology, they wouldn't be able to do that under alternative facilities. So the alternative facilities is deferred maintenance. They can repair a roof with a similar kind of roof. They can make other kinds of repairs. They could replace windows and that kind of thing. But they can't do any essentially new construction under alternative facilities. That's all in that deferred maintenance category. I'm not sure what the specifics with the St. Cloud School District are in terms of this fund transfer, but the issue with alternative facilities is it's got to be just for deferred maintenance projects.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam.
With an average square foot age of over 45 years, and there being over 2 million square feet, the annual maintenance costs should be in the ballpark to be able to, cover this, so that if they use their budgeted maintenance dollars for the, putting in the new wall, upgrading that, and then used this authority to do the maintenance, that might be a way of doing it that I think, I've got a lot of school districts in my area that have trouble passing a bond for once tried several times for a new high school. It needs it, but because of the way they went the first time around, they damaged that relationship with the community. And so, I really care about that community and school district relationship, because it's more than just passing something in the future that you need. You really need the community buy-in. So I don't disagree that this on paper is a good, reasonable approach to do, but if there was an alternate that could be done that wouldn't, because I've been on a school board, we all know that somebody is going to write a letter, and I'm just trying to suggest a possible avenue to look at with this, because we really need the community and the school together on things. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 431? Not Representative Dorholt, any final comments on your bill?
Thank you for hearing it today.
Very good. Thank you so much. So House File 431 is amended, will be laid over and for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
In the MS report. Representative Zerwas, we're going to take your bills next. House File 830. Would anyone care to move?
I'll move them.
Representative Hertas moves House File 830 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Zerwas, welcome to our committee. Did the superintendent from Elk River not able to make it today?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the hearing. Dr. Bezik, I believe, is still in the Senate. Testifying.
Okay.
In the Senate Education
Committee. Okay. Well, Representative Zerwas, did you want to wait? We could do one more bill. It's up to you if you want to wait for Dr. Bezik to get here.
Whichever you'd prefer.
So it's...
You know, since they made the drive down and are coming, yeah. Maybe I will wait.
Very good. We've got time. So thank you so much. We'll come back to House File 830. So Representative Dill... House File 312. Anyone care to move House File 312? Representative Van Zelk, I'm going to defer to the Iron Range contingent here on this one. Representative Van Zelk moves House File 312 to be laid over for possible inclusion. What was that, Representative Van Zelk? I missed that.
I was just commenting that I hope your wonderful attitude toward northern Minnesota continues throughout.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. Representative Dill, welcome.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. And, you know, Representative Anzell's Chair Marquardt lives in northern Minnesota as well, so I think that's a good thing. Anyway, well, members, the bill allows Lake County, which is located up from Lake Superior up to the Canadian border, and east of Duluth and west of Grand Portage. So if you kind of get the idea, it's this long, tall, looks like a pack of cigarettes on the border as far as counties are concerned. They're stacked. Cook, Lake, St. Louis, and then to the west. This allows a local levy for technology without a vote. It's that simple. Then you get into the finances of it. And, you know, the reason we're here is because we have demonstrated over and over and over that we cannot pass a local levy. That I think three times in the last decade, they've had a local levy attempt to do capital expenditures and failed. And one of the reasons is because they have a $30 million bond issue that's paying off the school system that was passed, I think, in 2002. And there's just a certain amount of appetite for additional additional levy to be paid off. I don't know how else to explain the bill. Superintendent Crandall is here. We don't have the tax capacity up there, those types of things, and we can't literally deliver the same kind of education in those rural districts, frankly, than any better than in Cook County or Lake County or St. Louis County or any of those school districts that just can't get this done. And I mean, in 2142, where I'm, my wife teaches, their levy has expired. Their operating levy has expired. They have a giant capital levy that they just passed, and they just can't get the job done. And so that's the reason the bill came forward. The question is why isn't this statewide? Well, I don't represent every school district in the state. Lake County came to me and said they want it, so that's the reason I'm here.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Crandall is here.
Superintendent Crandall, did you care to testify? Sounds like
yes,
you've come some distance. If you would identify yourself for the tape, please.
Phil Crandall, Superintendent, Lake Superior School District.
Thank you.
Chair Marker. We are one of approximately 10% of the districts in the state do not have a current referendum. As Representative Dill indicated, we are quite a large geographic area. We're actually the second largest for the state. and 80% of our geographic area is either state or federal land. So of that, you know, about a little under 20% is where actually the people live. And then within that, we're also a very recreational heavy area. And so approximately 40% of the property owners don't pay on an operating referendum as well. So that's kind of the makeup of our area and some of the rationale behind it. Is it Representative Dill also pointed out in 2007, 2008, and 2010, we did not pass operating referendums that went out to the voters. What was included in your packet is our district technology plan for the next few years. And so if we were able to get this funding, it would free up money for investments in technology. Areas that we would be looking at would be in the areas of like a one-to-one initiative. Those one-to-one initiatives are going around and throughout the state. It's something we've been unable to do. We're currently working with just a few teachers to do some of those ideas, such as the flipped classroom, where they're teaching and recording their lesson, and then they're able to work with kids, basically to get to the kids that need it the most. They're able to get those high flyers and say, you know, hey, you can look at the tape, the next tape, the recording, and work on the next section. And they, as teachers, can then work more strictly with that group that is in higher need. Now, specifically in math is where we're experimenting with that now, and we'd like to implement that throughout our district. The other component of our district were two main communities, Silver Bay and Two Harbors, and we're about 30 miles apart. And the fact is that some of those upper-level courses, like the AP courses, some of our Calc courses, higher English courses, college in the schools, opportunities for our students are getting smaller and smaller because they have less and less kids enrolled. But with technology, we would be able to basically salvage those courses by having one teacher in one of the communities teaching both communities through technology use. Similar to the ITV model that's been used in the past. We still are using our monies for technology. We, as I just shared, we have a few of our teachers who are working on that model of the flipped classroom, so we're continuing on there. This year we purchased new computer workstations for our teachers to upgrade. Those, they were around 15 years old, some of those computers that we upgraded this year. Another area that we're focused in on with technology monies, if they came in, we would be able to once again offer that one-to-one instruction. Along with the school, the actual Lake County is looking at, and actually it's almost, it'll be complete hopefully sometime the end of this summer, but it's called LakeNet. It's basically high fiber optic countywide, so every home in Lake County will have high-speed internet capabilities. With that, and with our, you know, technology capabilities, we'd be able to have students stay at home, you know, on days like today, and they could still access their coursework. They could access the recorded lectures. We will have those. We'd have those put up on our website. Other capabilities would be that, and this is a part of our demographics. Around 40% of our families don't have emails. With a high fiber, hopefully that would be something in the future that families will take advantage of. But the other piece is that there are many families in our communities that don't have technology access as it is. With technology funds, we would look at opening up our labs even more than we can now, have like kiosks out in the cafeteria area or wherever throughout the building, so that students after school, before school, can access those during the lunch hour, and also community can come in and access technology use throughout the day. Another area that we're working on with community and technology is kind of not the technology that most people think of, but it's in the computer, not computer tech, but more industrial technology. We actually have a relationship right now with the Mesabi Range Community College, and we're offering after-school programs at both our Silver Bay School and our Two Harbor site. And so we've access technology there, increased our welding technology and our millwright technology at both sites. We're offering actual college courses in our buildings, which has been a real benefit for our community as well. The other component with increased technology would be the fact that we'd be able to save money into the future with using the one-to-one or some kind of a tablet or device to actually have your books on versus going out and purchasing that curriculum as it's been in the past through the paper model there. The other is that we're looking on, we are, as been shared, a large geographic area. Of our population, we have a fair amount that are also doing like the Minnesota Virtual Online and some other online options. What we'd like to do is go out and get those kids back into our district and offer those programs within our district. And the benefit there that we see for the community would be that those students would be able to continue with their online programming, but they would have on-site within the community, they'd be able to come in and meet with a math teacher, meet with an English teacher and such. And so we have a lot of ideas, real positive ideas to increase engagement, increase opportunities for students and community members through technology.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Superintendent, have you estimated the property tax increase if this proposal is adopted?
Superintendent Crandall?
Yes, it's approximately
$300,000. Representative
Erickson.
Representative Dill, what kind of increase would that be on an average home in this school district? Do you know?
Don't have
Representative
the information.
Dill.
Superintendent, to you.
Superintendent Crandall, any information on that?
Not at this time. We can get that information for you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Wilt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was also wondering, and looking at this technology plan, just wondering if you had taken this plan to the district and what the parents think, what feedback you've received.
Superintendent Crandall.
Thank you, Chair. The technology plan is actually posted on our website, and so that has been shared. We have a technology committee that is made up primarily of teaching staff, of which are residents and parents. And we actually have some students that participate in that as well. So they're for the program.
Representative Wills.
So just a follow-up. So then what kind of feedback have you received from the parents and the folks living in the district?
Superintendent Crandall.
What we've heard, the primary comments are we would like to increase the opportunities for our students. One of the opportunities is the PSEO opportunity, and we have a fair amount of our students specific actually in the Silver Bay that take PSEO courses online, and we actually provide that opportunity on site at our high school. And so they've been very pleased with that, and if anything, they ask for more opportunities for our students through technology.
Thank you very much. Anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 312? Seeing none, Representative Dill, any final comments?
Well, thank you very much. I think there's a couple things I want to reassure, and you hear us talk about this in the far north on an ongoing basis for the last 80 years. That is that 80% of the land in this county belongs to a government, of which we cannot get 1 cent from to operate our schools. And for those who have been here and heard Representative Rukavina, it's been going on for ever and ever. Secondly is the county in this place where there's only 20% of the land that does actually generate any opportunity to tax has gone out and done a $70 million project countywide to wire all of the homes that are on that, on all of the businesses that are on the remaining 20% of the county, so that every single house, every single business has the opportunity to have high-speed internet. And you heard Superintendent Crandall tell you that a large percentage of the people that live in this county today don't even have email. I mean, that's got to tell you something about the need to try and get something for these kids so that they can get some, you know, get an education. Most of these kids drive or ride a bus 25 to 4, well, how far from Fall Lake Township to the school?
Superintendent Crandall.
Yes, that's an hour and a half.
I mean, so do you, that's Ms. Chairman, that's what we're up against here. And I have not, this bill was introduced early on. I haven't heard a single negative comment on the bill. Now, I understand the fiscal note here and what it says against the target for those kind, your education target and those kinds of things. But I'd like for you to seriously consider the bill. I wouldn't have introduced it. This is a unique situation. In fact, I think that you're going to see other counties come in and other school districts come in and seek this kind of thing for the same reasons, particularly in these counties where they're highly dominated by federal and state land. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Representative Dillon. We also, Mr. Strom did some calculations in answer to Representative Erickson's questions. It looked like it'd be about, the tax rate would be about 1.4% of tax capacity. So that'd be about $14 on a $100,000 valued home. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dillon. And we will lay over House File 312 for possible inclusion.
Yeah.
And that's perfect timing. Representative Zerwas. And we already had House File 830 moved to be laid over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Zerwas,
Mr. Chair,
welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Would it be possible to take 831 first?
We can be very flexible here.
Mr. Chair, I'll move 831.
Representative Erickson moves House File 831 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just do a brief introduction of Dr. Bezik, who may still... He plays hockey still, but apparently running through the tunnel from the lower chamber takes his breath away, so...
I thought the drive down here was long.
Superintendent Bezik, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have some handouts here that I'm going to refer to, so if we can get... Yes.
Please proceed.
Yeah, breath there.
Yes.
Our 35-minute ride turned into an hour and 45 this morning.
I can imagine.
And again, we'll address that in a Metro Equity piece. So.
Superintendent Bezik, now, do you have school today in Elk River?
No, we did call off school. We got about 6 to 8 when I left, or when I was up at 4:30, and with it continuing to come down, trying to get our bus drivers in and out to...
Yeah.
All of our extended area, our land mass is equal to Anoka-Hennepin, which is the largest district in the state, you know, a little under 200 miles, square miles. So
Superintendent Bezik, how does this compare to Fergus Falls when you were there as far as the winter? Is it kind of the same situation?
Up in Fergus, there's three strands of barbed wire between there and Saskatoon that slow the wind down. And so anytime the wind blew up there, you know what it's like.
Very good.
That's good.
Please.
Okay, I'm going to refer to this the PowerPoint handout really first, and just kind of give you an overview of the Elk River Area District, which is located in the upper northwest corner of the metro area. And I'm not going to go through this in detail, but I would draw your attention to the middle slide on the first page, which is our mission statement. And our mission, in short, is to educate, inspire, and empower all of our kids, and all means all. And if you look at the lower slide there, we are the eighth largest district in the state. We're a little under 13,000 students with 9 elementaries, 4 high schools, and 4 middle schools. What's put us in this fiscal challenge right now is our explosive growth over the last roughly 15 years. We grew roughly 300 to 500 students a year in the early 2000s. And, 5 years, we grew over 3,600 kids. And when you take a look at that number, 3,600, that's larger than 80% of the school districts in the state, so which put a tremendous financial burden on the district as far as debt service. And our people are paying good taxes, but our taxing capacity is going to pay off that debt. It's not going into the classroom. So we have an extremely hard time passing any excess levies or improving on our levy situation. If we turn to the next page, the top frame on page 2, you can see the our student, our diversity issues and our special populations, how they match the state. They're continuing to trend up. And in the middle frame there, we run, again, the eighth largest district, over 2,200 employees. We run about $125 million budget. So we go through a lot of dollars up there. In the past, we've done some remarkable things as far as trying to be fiscally accountable. Over the last 7 years, we've won several awards for transparency and what have you to try and prove our fiscal responsibility to our clientele. Administratively, we're extremely lean. The average is roughly around 5%. We run about 3.4, so there's a lot of people wearing a lot of different hats up there. The bottom frame is really kind of the core of the matter here. You know, I've got to cut about $5 million over the next 3 years. We're running into deficit spending. You know, all districts were saved by that stimulus package that came through a few years ago, but now it's time to pay the piper, and we've got to make some hard cuts. We ran a referendum this fall. We had a portion of our levy renewed. The second question to help us with our debt did not pass. So basically, you know, they let us keep the keys to the car, but they didn't give us any additional gas to go anywhere. So now we have to make those budget adjustments in the upcoming years. When you look on page 3 in the middle frame, that really tells the story of our debt service, where we're at, and why we're having a hard time investing in our schools. And because we're really a property-poor district also. But you can see the difference between the metro and the state average as far as our house payment that we have to make. So, you know, debt service is really cutting into our taxing capacity. Again, I mentioned our people are paying their fair share of taxes, but it's going to reduce that debt, which previous to this year was about $180 million. The operating levy, you can see on the bottom frame there, shows the discrepancy between the state average and the metro average. We just cannot raise more money. We're having a real tough time with that. We've gone to the voters, and they've just said, no, you've got what you've got. And so thus our present budget situation. And even with that, we run a six-period day. We run very few options for kids, but our test scores continue to grow. Over the last 7 years, we showed continued improvement. Now, I don't want to make this a model for every district in the state, because then you'll see that cutting budgets, you know, increase test scores. I think we've been lucky. We've got some exceptional teachers and team in place there. But I will leave that go. And just a few comments here. The fund transfer that we're looking at in 831 is from the excess debt service. Now, by law, we have to levy 105%. until that is paid off. But that we've been making our obligations. We're in no danger of not making those obligations. So that 5% builds up, and we have roughly $4 million in that account that I can't use. And this is voter-approved money for capital projects or investment projects. About 3 years ago or so, we had a similar bill to this in the education bill, but then at the last hour, I think the bill went up in smoke, or whatever happens to those bills that don't make it through the session. They're somewhere underneath the Capitol somewhere. So that we lost that. I had it in my hands. I just watched it go through here. But we have a number of projects that are worthy of this money. You know, the capital projects are educational programming projects that we think have a lot of merit. And just I'm going to give you three quick examples here that we have on the table that we're looking at ways to finance, invest in, because they're going to meet the needs of the kids in the future. We've got a biomedical magnet that we want to implement in Zimmerman High School. Again, we need dollars for equipment and training. We have an online virtual academy that is on the verge of taking off for the next year, but what we want to implement is technology cafes around the community and in the school. And one of the reasons for that is we've still got jammed schools in the South. Now, I would rather spend $2 million on investing in a project like this than going to the voters asking for $25 million for an addition onto the high school there. Personally, my own personal opinion, in Minnesota, I don't think we should ever build another high school with technology the way it is. We're just not forced to use it to our advantage. Again, that's just my personal thought, but this is the initiative we're working on. A third one is an innovative K-8 school that really is a standards-based, but this is the initiative we're working on. A third one is an innovative K-8 school that really is a standards-based school. It's a year-round 45-15 type schedule that works on the legislation that was passed, I think, in 2009, that was called district-created site-governed school legislation. It's the way a district can basically start a school that emulates a charter, but you have the oversight of a school district. With an AVID Foundation, if you know what the AVID program is for teachers and students, heavy on technology, and a student and teacher-led school, and that's what we're looking at developing, but we don't have the dollars for that. You know, the reason I mention these projects is because we're always told to think outside the box, and you know, we've been thinking outside of the box for years, and now we have to act outside of the box. And I'm asking you for that same thought process. There is, I need you to act outside the box and take some of these and these pieces of legislation to allow us the latitude to use our dollars in creative ways to meet the needs of tomorrow's learners. And I always like to use the example of, you know, looking in other terms. If you're looking in the manufacturing world and you want to put out a new product, you've got to do several things. You've got to retool the factory, which means changing your way of thinking. You've got to retrain your employees, which is staff development. Then you've got to find creative ways to finance that. And that's what we're here looking for, is ways to change, to fund these programs as we move forward. And that is my piece on this fund transfer. Again, we'd like to see it move forward. We thought we had it a few years ago, and we're back at it again.
Very good. I think of Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, did I hear you correctly? You went to a six-period day and your score and your test scores went up?
You know, it's...
Superintendent Beasley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we've, over the past six, 7 years, yes, we've gone to a six-period day. You know, everything we've done framework-wise says it's not going to, it shouldn't work. But we've got a phenomenal teaching and learning team, and we use data. Like I've been in several districts. I've never seen another district. You know, a lot of districts capture data, but not a lot of districts use it. And we use it extremely well. And we've showed a 7-year growth on every indicator. We just got our testing back on our LEP students, and even those students have those students have showed tremendous growth this year on the tests that just came in.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, and I just want to compliment you on that and your staff and your teachers. That's what we need to see all across the district. The other thing about the six-period day, and I had a district that went to the six-period day, too. I understand it, you know, especially at the high school level, it eliminates electives, but it does emphasize traditional academics in a much greater way. And I simply want to point out to the committee that that emphasis on traditional academics versus having more electives can produce higher test scores as long as you got a staff and administration that decides to make that a primary goal without additional funding. Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, it sounds like this district is unique in some ways with the explosive growth and, you know, being kind of on the outer rings of the suburbs there. I just was wondering, maybe along Representative Grunhagen's questions, how are you doing with the achievement gap and indicators of graduation rates amongst, you know, minority groups, things like that?
Superintendent Beasley?
Actually, we're doing very well. That's another gap that's closing. But again, you have to look at our district is, I believe, minority population-wise, we're very small. We're in that 10 to 12%. Free and reduced is probably 20, 22%. Those populations, as I showed on one of the slides here, are continually growing. But, you know, what we're able to do is address those needs right now. We're putting, you know, funding into those pieces that, you know, with the sequestration and some of these other pieces that are falling apart on us, those are some things that we're going to have to look at as far as reduction areas.
Thanks. Just curious.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience would care to testify for or against House File 831? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, anything further on House File 831?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for taking time for this. I guess a few thoughts on this. The Elk River School District has shown, I think, real responsible governance in very challenging times, dealing with explosive growth that then resulted in a housing bubble that has affected our district extremely, extremely difficult circumstances in our area, as property values have declined over the last several years. Our district has managed to continue to produce quality results because they've been forward-looking, forward-leaning, and innovative. I would ask that the committee allow our district to continue doing that with this fund transfer. And also, don't hold this against them, but I'm a proud Elk River class of 99 graduate, so this is what you can look forward to.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Erickson had made the motion to lay over House File 831 for possible inclusion. Very good. And we already have on a motion on House File 830, so let's move to House File 830. Representative Zerwas.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this deals with equity education funding and the metro rate for our students. As many of you know, the Elk River Area School District dips into the metro area in Hennepin County and Anoka County. However, according to how the per pupil rate is calculated, we do not qualify for that extra 0.25 bump currently because our school district office is located in Sherburn County in Elk River. So we have significant issues and we have significant pressures being a metro area district without that metro area funding. And Representative Erickson kind of chuckled and suggested just move it. The concern is, and it's, trust me, the city of Rogers is trying very, very hard to get our school district to relocate their headquarters into Hennepin County. I don't think our school district should be using capital dollars to move an office building or build a new office building or relocate. We need to focus on teachers and students and putting teachers in classroom and educating students, not moving 5 miles south down the road. And so what this will do will allow our metro area students that should qualify for that 0.25 bump, With that, I'll turn it over to our school superintendent.
Well, actually, Superintendent Jane, our school board chair, Jane Bunting, will take care of this portion of it.
Very good. Would you please introduce yourself?
Jane Bunting, a chair of the Elk River School Board. Good morning, and chair and representatives, thank you for allowing me to come to testify this morning. When I joined or was elected into the board, I wore a business hat because this is not my day job. I am a business owner of 17 years. My husband and I own a wholesale spice company. But what I wanted to say is that in coming to the board, one of the first things I wanted to do is acquaint myself with the budget, because I really wanted to ensure that we were doing a really good job. I knew the quality was there, but was there anything we could also take away? I came away elated from the second meeting because there was already a district initiative looking at chipping away at the expense side of the equation. And I'm proud to say that in the last 3 years, we have chipped away $8 million from our budget through a variety of measures. We are fiscally responsible. My business lens tells me that. And what I am doing today is also using that same lens in making the case for the fact that the revenue side we encountered or found during the course of our work that there was something we weren't getting. And as we went through line by line in our budget, seriously, we looked at some of the revenue and also did a second thing. We compare ourselves to other districts. And I'm not just talking about other large districts. We're the eighth largest, so of course that. But other metro districts. And that's who we are. We feel we are like them. And the truth is that's when we discovered this equity or inequity of equity funding for being having people reside within the metro area. And that is about 27% of our children actually reside in Anoka or Hennepin County. I happen to reside in Rogers, so I'm well aware of this. The thing about this whole, a picture is worth a thousand words. So if you would turn to this map, which was a handout today, I think it says it all. You know, you look at that map, and we've all looked at the Metro County map. We all know there's a little bump out in the upper left-hand corner. And here it looks like there's a chunk out. And we say, that's us. That's us. So we overlaid Elk River into that chunk. But if you look at how we fit into the metro area, it's not just that we have 27% of our people residing there. It's that we do fit. We are a member of the metro area. And we think that very likely when the legislation was written, it was about additional costs, higher costs for metro area schools. We encounter those directly. There's no question that our vendor contracts are the same type of vendor contracts that go through other metro schools. There's no question that when we look at such things as health care and all of the rest, we're dealing with the same companies our other metro school districts are. So my message is simple. We think that we need a corrective action. We think that the metro equity needs to be looked at and forwarded on through for the correction. I believe it's a 1.25 factor. And that's what we're looking for today, and I ask you for.
Ms. Mundane, thank you so much. And I have just a couple questions. Are there any other school districts that also have boundaries in the metro area that also would not be getting the metro equity revenue? Superintendent,
yeah, if you look at that map, you know, the pieces that are missing there, you've got, and I don't know how much, what percentage are in Hennepin County on the west side there, but you've got the Buffalo, St. Michael, Rockford, I think are the ones that fit down this loop down here. So, and again, I don't know how many of them are in Hennepin. Anoka. We deal with five counties. We have Anoka, Hennepin, Isanti, Wright, and Sherburne.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, would you be able to provide, not today, but provide for the committee what school districts are in that border within the metro area that are not receiving the metro equity in revenue and what amount that would be? And that's, Superintendent Bisig, what amount of revenue would this be for Elk River?
Okay, that's just what I was going to cover. If I can go through this.
I'm sorry.
Chair.
Go ahead, Superintendent.
You know, about 25 to 30% of our students actually reside in the 7-county metro area, and since some of the information that we passed out, the way the bill is written is only reflecting those students right there, which are about 25-30% of them, and that would bring us in roughly $100,000, which 25 of that would be state aid, and the balance of 70 some thousand of it would be local levy. Okay, what I would ask, and I'd like to amend this to, is our entire district of the, you know, close to 13,000 kids, and what that would be is about 100,000 out of state aid and about 291 out of local levy, you know, for a, you know, a total of roughly around 400,000. Not a lot of money, but it means a lot to us, especially when we're in a cut mode like this year. That's 6-7 teachers, and that's what we have to keep focus on in the classroom there. And as Jane alluded to here, you know, our vendor contracts and our labor contracts all emulate the metro area. We don't have a separate contract for the teachers in Hennepin County and Anoka. I mean, Zimmerman teachers have the same contract, and the same with our vendors too. They're all coming out of the metro to deal with this. And you know, if you need any more convincing that we're not metro, you know, four words: rush hour, morning, evening. If you've ever driven up up that way, you know you can't get there from here. I mean, I can get down here in about 35 minutes on a Sunday morning, but it took us almost 2 hours today to get down here because of the congestion and traffic. And that's making a difference if you go 10 or 94. You know, we're there. We got the commuter rail going right dead center through Elk River. And we're about 2 to 3 years from this whole explosion happening again. The building permits are up and the developments are being plotted. We're starting our meetings again with the different communities, the developers, to find out, okay, where are we going to have to put schools in the next 5 years? Because it's happening again.
Let me do this, because we just have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to just ask right now, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 830? If not, I also heard Superintendent Bisig say that you'd like this to apply to the entire district. So
if we could amend that to the entire district, I think that would be...
What I think we'll do is, rather than working on going over an amendment right now, that's on the record here. So, and this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. So just members know that is something we'll look at. Is that all right, rather than actually amending it at this point? Is that okay? Representative Hertaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we can use some of this extra revenue to fix the transportation commuter problem that we have. Mr. Chair, you have already identified what I was going to bring up, and maybe Mr. Zerwas and the Elk River School District would like to further amend the bill. The Rockford, Delano, and Buffalo School Districts are that gaping hole here that predominantly are in Hennepin County, but all have their district offices just over the county line. And it doesn't make sense to bisect these school districts, I think, when they overlap as a metro school district. So each of those three school districts would also, in my best judgment, qualify for this type of a change in the statute.
I think Representative Zerwas has brought to the committee today an issue we need to look at, so not just for Elk River, but for others. So thank you. Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Zerwas and the testifiers. I appreciate you guys coming down. I'm from Crosby, Ironton. I drive through Elk River all the time. I'm familiar with how you're just about Metro, and I can appreciate the unique difficulties that you're dealing with. What I'd like to say is that, and sort of to Representative Hurtaugh's point, is that there's an entire class of school districts out there that are probably in this, you know, in this situation where they aren't getting Metro funding, and they should be, and they need to have it to deal with the problems they face. There are also entire groups of school districts out there who are in different situations, whether it's a property tax disparity situation, or that they have, you know, sparsity troubles, or whatever it is. And I think that if you look at the $400,000 to this school district, plus whatever the number would be to Representative Hurtaugh's district, plus the numbers to the rest of the school districts throughout the state who really desperately need this funding, you know, a dollar here, a dollar there, and pretty soon you start talking about real money. And so I just hope that it's impressed upon everybody in this committee just how important education funding is, and that hopefully we'll see a little bit of support for the tax bill that comes up to pay for it as well. Thank you.
Representative Zerwas, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. Thank you to the committee for hearing our two bills today. I think you're accurate in saying that we have identified an issue, and for a large district like the Elk River Area School District, eighth largest in the state, these districts, as our superintendent has alluded to, our district, with just the size of it, we have large vendor contracts, large labor contracts, and there, I assure you, they're not looking towards the Princeton School District and the Malacca School District for a comparison for benefits. They're looking to Anoka-Hennepin. They're looking to the metro area. And so we have real metro issues that we're facing on a daily basis in our district. And I hope this committee can help us out.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I think it was Representative Hurtaugh. Did you move that originally?
I did.
About 8:30 to be laid over for possible consideration. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for your testimony. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Members, one quick item. Tomorrow, we meet jointly with the Senate again to go over the OLA report on special education. That's in room 200. Room 200
Same
tomorrow.
Time.
Same time. You bet. So thank you much. We are adjourned.